Father, let the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing in thy sight, Yahweh, our strength and our redeemer. B'Shem Yahshua. Hallelujah. Amen. Thank you, friends. I'm Michael Banik from Fulton, Missouri. I'm originally from Chicago. Nobody's perfect, okay? Title of my remarks today is Discovering Your Contempt. I've been working on this for several weeks, and as always, it's an aggregation of a lot of things over many years. I just did not expect this amount of resonance with other messages given at the feast. So I take special note. When we see a lot of overlap, we got to take note like that and see what Yahweh's telling us. I never say, let's see what Yahweh's trying to tell us. What's he trying to tell me? What's he trying to tell you? Yahweh doesn't try anything. He just goes and does it. What is Yahweh saying? That's what I want to know. What's he speaking about? There's an image there of a thief. I captured that from Wikipedia. I do attribution for the photos at the bottom of my slides, and that's what those little teeny-weeny letters are. That's just to provide attribution for those who are watching if they want to know where all these images come from. Now, this is a thief who is caught capturing, I think, one lira, and his face is defiant. And I think you'll find that at Wikipedia under the heading of defiance. Contempt, defiance, bitterness, all these things are tied together. Here's what's coming. We'll be giving you some mostly biblical examples of contempt. I was surprised to find how deep, vast, and wide this subject is. I have reason to believe that contempt is something that we struggle with all the time and we don't even know it. Have you ever met somebody who's heedless? You just can't talk to them? That became a habit for them, to be that way. You can also have the habit of holding in contempt people who don't deserve it. And we'll find an amazing bridge to understanding the unpardonable sin. I don't know about you, but I've been satisfied with my understanding up till now. But as a result of this study and this research, bang, I really think I got it figured out. And of course, if I'm speaking amiss, you know, the elders can always come up here and grab the microphone and straighten me out. But this is all harm. I mean, really, Yahshua says, blasphemy of the spirit is unpardonable. Everything's going to be forgiven except that. But over in Hebrews, it says, sinning willfully is unpardonable. Well, what's the connection between the two? You will see it today. Many of you have come a long distance. You're going to be challenged today. Oh, recently, I gave a sermon on Yahshua coming in disguise. That was a nice sermon. Not too long ago, I gave a sermon on records from the early history of the Messianic faith, giving historical evidence of some of the very doctrines and practices we have. That was a nice sermon, too. This is not a nice sermon. You're going to be challenged. You're going to flinch on occasion. But that's okay. You came a long way. You want to get your money's worth, right? Oh, yes. Back off. We're going to find out the root cause of underlying contempt. And I should tell you in advance, that's where I hit a brick wall. On one hand, this might be the most important sermon you hear at the feast. But I'm telling you up front, to a certain extent, I have failed. This is a first for me. This is the first time where I'm going to ask the congregation to finish the sermon for me. I don't mean we're going to do a Q&A or a hot wash or anything like that. We're not going to do any audience participation. You're going to finish the sermon for me by going out there and getting a grip, control, ascendancy over a deeper problem that leads to contempt. Okay, I'm going to move over to the side now like a TED Talk. I hope the monitors and the screen support me. First, I'll look at a definition of contempt. The act of despising. This is from Merriam Online. the state of mind of one who despises. Synonym is disdain, lack of respect or reverence for something. Number two, the state of being despised. Three, this is the big one, willful disobedience to or open disrespect of a court, judge, or legislative body. For example, contempt of court. So we're going to go through examples of contempt. Contempt for this, contempt for that. And you should be asking yourself, am I guilty of any of this? First one I put up there was contempt of court. The courts have zero tolerance for contempt of court. Copping an attitude with the judge, threatening the judge, defying the judge. The courts have enormous power to levy contempt charges. And turns out that I have reason to believe they're doing a lot of that these days. But we have a commandment in the Torah. There's a host of remembrances in the Torah and additional commands to remember outside the law about the Sabbath. That's a command to remember. When practicing Jews wake up every morning, they have six remembrances they must go through. It's always fun to look at Judy or Dan when I talk about this stuff, because they know more about Judaism than I do. Where's Dan and Judy? Okay. Just hoping they would give me a nod, like, yeah, Mike, you're right. There's six remembrances they go through every morning, like the Sabbath. This is one of them. They have to remember Miriam. In Deuteronomy 24:9, it says, remember what Yahweh the Elohim did unto Miriam. By the way, after that you were come forth out of Egypt. Now here's what happened. Her and Aaron wanted to get some kind of control over Moses, some kind of either equivalency or control. And Yahweh was really angry about that. And he called Aaron and Miriam forth. He said, you listen. When I talk to you guys, it's symbols, it's dreams and similes and things. When I talk to Moses, it's face to face. How dare you? Well, no, I didn't ask that question. But the meaning was, you have no business daring to defy his authority. And it's significant that Miriam was an older sister to both Moses and Aaron. And she received a harsher punishment. This was not a deal where Moses was the big brother and she was being sassy with her little brother. This is not some deal where Miriam is the little sister and Moses is the big brother and she's sassing that way. Remember, Miriam saw Moses in the river. So she was older than him. Miriam was struck with leprosy. Aaron was not. Miriam was the oldest of the bunch. Yahweh has a special, observation and research, he harbors a special punishment for those who defy authority. Maybe some of you have seen these YouTube videos with these idiots. They go on the street and they just start filming things. And they want the police to come over and ask them, what are you doing? Then they go stompy foot about their rights, aggravating the police. I'd rather police be out there chasing real criminals. We have many examples of contempt for authority today. Oh, I didn't put it in there. There's a commandment from the Torah. You will not revile the head of your people, the leader of your people. And you can see even the apostles had a fear of this. You are not supposed to speak evil of leaders. This is in the Torah. I just didn't happen to slip it in there. How about contempt for parents? This was simply not tolerated, contempt for parents. The Torah, in Deuteronomy 21, 18 to 21, says, if someone has a stubborn and rebellious son who does not obey his father and mother, then all the men of his town are to stone him to death. You must purge the evil from among you. That's their crime. That's their juvenile crime control. Defying the parents was met with capital punishment. Very few people know this. This is serious business. You're worried about where society's going. If they applied Yahweh's law. Now, by the way, the parents didn't simply go to the elders and say, we want this kid executed. The elders had to decide that this was the case. Okay, how about contempt for brethren? Yahshua does not allow this at all. In the great sermon, Matthew 5:22, "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, meaning empty one, shall be in danger of the council, the Sanhedrin. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of Gehenna fire." Let's unpack this one. To be angry with your brother without a cause. If my brother has done something to stir me up, it might be justifiable to get at least a little angry. But should we be angry with people if there's no reason for it? We're going to come back to this idea of without a cause, to be angry without a cause. We're going to come back to that a little later. Yahshua says, when you do that, you're in danger of judgment. Layer two, whoever says to his brother, you're worthless, Raka, you're worthless. It traces back to Hebrews 73:86. That guy shall be in danger of the Sanhedrin. Now, I have an image there, a classical painting of a Sanhedrin. Yahshua assumes you're going to have a body of judges sorting things out. And if any of you call me worthless or talk down to me, you can wind up in front of the Sanhedrin. Now, he says you're in danger of the Sanhedrin. Why are you not going directly to the Sanhedrin? Because you have Matthew 18 with that intermediate step. But we are not to look down on each other for any of these frivolous reasons. But whoever serves, no, in our assembly, we don't have a panel of judges or Sanhedrin. Yahshua anticipates something like that, a function like that. And in this case, we have elders who decide these things. But whoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of the Gehenna fire. In other words, you go right to jail. You don't collect $200. You don't go past go or anything. You're in danger of being judged by Yahweh. We should never have contempt for each other. There's no reason for it. But as you'll see, there's temptations we experience in this realm. Contempt for the needy. This is a hard one. I don't like to confront this, but I have to. Now, the image up there is a classical painting of the Good Samaritan. We will be tempted to instinctively and secretly have contempt for the needy because their needs represent a latent responsibility, a burden on our resources. And, you know, it's only amplified. To a certain extent, it's amplified today because of all that fraud. Every day, depending on the news wires, every day we're getting another report of some government agency that was set up to help people. I'm not talking about DOGE. Right? Beyond that, it's just going on and on. These agencies are set up to pass around money to people because of a need, and you find out it's all fake. It's a racket. Well, the Good Samaritan parable is a good one. Luke 10, verse 31 to 33. "And by chance, there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise, a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him and passed on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him." That painting may not be too clear, but there's the painting, there's a Levite and a priest in the distance. Now, one might argue, Brother Mike, they couldn't risk becoming unclean. They have Levitical duties. They have priesthood duties. Come on, guys. They've been doing this priesthood stuff for centuries. You can be sure they had substitutes. There's a lot of reasons why the priest or the Levite ordained for a particular day can't do the job, and they have substitutes. They have backups. No, they just didn't want to be bothered. And that is a problem. Our flesh, our carnal mind, our territorial instincts tell us, I'm not going to get involved. And I know there's fraud out there. I've made that a life hobby to try to figure out who these frauds are. That would be a wonderful roundtable with any of you. These hucksters who wait at the exit ramps in Chicago, you pull up to the stop sign at the exit ramp for these big highways cutting through town. There'll be people who lean their head in and say, "Hey, I need a dollar for gas." It's a lot of fun to look to see their faces fall when you say, "Okay, I'll meet you at the gas station across the street." It's really funny to catch them like that. But those who really have needs, you know, we don't want to withhold anything from people who have needs. How about emotional needs? Some people require a lot of time. Some people require a lot of energy. Let's tap the brake here. For those who are needy, they must be receptive to wise counsel to get better. Otherwise, they're stuck in that mode where they like being needy. But they have to have a mind to say, "Hey, look, I just need a little help here. I want to get on a platform and launch on my own." And so the needy do have to be really needy like this guy. Or once they come around, they have to receive wise counsel on how to become self-sufficient. I know it's a vast subject. Those who know me well know that I'm utterly fascinated by how to solve this problem. It's hard to untangle with all that fraud out there. But we may have people in our midst who really need friendship, contact, time, our most valuable resource. And you may want to pull back. Let's speak to married guys. You know, some fella comes in here and he's got strapping good looks. Do you married guys get like defensive? Like, "Ooh, I'm in trouble now." Same thing in the opposite direction. Are any of you, boy or girl, or do you get jealous if somebody of the opposite gender, you get jealous if somebody of your same gender comes in, might represent a risk to the relationship you have? What you'll find if you be honest with yourself is that we have opportunities for contempt all over the place. This one is subtle. And I think many of you are going to leave here with a golden nugget today. The Bible talks about its hidden secrets, its hidden knowledge. You're going to walk away with a nugget today. Watch out now. You're going to like this. Contempt for your victim. I don't think this applies to anybody here. I hope it doesn't. But do you exert undue pressure on those who have no means of escaping your evil? In Genesis 30, verse 43, it's talking about Jacob and his relationship with Laban. And Laban has deceived him, gave him the wrong wife when he'd paid his labor wages. Then he had to work another 7 years for the real wife. And the man, Jacob, increased exceedingly and had much cattle and maidservants and menservants and camels and donkeys. Let's look at a later development, because Jacob's getting kind of fed up with what Laban has been doing to him. And the truth will come out as we go through this slide and the next. And he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, "Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and that which was our father's hath he gotten all his abundance. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before." I underline that. Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. Now, here's what happened. While Jacob remained in the clan there with Laban, Laban kept changing the wages. He'd say, "Look, from now on, the striped cattle are yours." Then all of a sudden, the striped cattle would increase. And Laban would say, "Okay, we're going to flip it around now. From now on, the striped cattle are mine, and you get the speckled ones." And so then the speckled ones would increase. And no matter what deal Laban forced on him, Jacob increased and Laban decreased. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah, Laban's daughters, to the field unto his flock. So he was having a private meeting with these two wives. He says, "I see your father's countenance that is not toward me as before." So what does this mean? Whenever Laban's talking to Jacob, he's got a sourpuss. But when he's talking to everybody else, he's got a normal face. But the Elohim of my father hath been with me, and you know that with all my power I have served your father. So he's a faithful employee. And your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. I don't know if many of you have ever worked for bad bosses, but they do everything they can to take advantage of you. And they have contempt for you. They have no regard for you whatsoever. You're a thing to them. But Elohim suffered him not to hurt me. What happened is Laban kept trying to hurt Jacob, and he escaped that, and he earned contempt for that. But I'd like to draw your attention to a hidden secret wisdom nugget. This is going to be something special. I see your father's countenance that it was not toward me as before. If you engage somebody in some enterprises and they're looking at you with a scowl or, you know, kind of hangdog face, bulldog face, that's what I mean. But to everybody else, they have a normal face. That's strong evidence they have contempt for you. Okay. Now, sooner or later, they drop their guard. When I learned this many years ago, I was actually involved in a transaction with a woman in Chicago. No, it wasn't a romance. No. But I remember being in one of the major business buildings there. And I noticed that all the people walked by, she was waving in front. When she looked at me, it was like this. I thought, I just learned this. Another brother in the covenant taught me this. I said, my gosh. And I found out later this lady had contempt for me. So if you want one of those, hidden, I'm not into body language, but this is one of those things that is right out of the Bible. Contempt for your victim. One of the great ways to find out your character is to put you in authority and see how you act. It turns out being in authority is a great test of anybody's character. Contempt for your spouse. Men snapping at their wives openly. I hate that. And if I speak up, it's only going to make it worse. I don't know what to do, but I see that. Women openly defying their husbands. I hate that too. You girls are going to be on occasion tempted to pull this stunt, and you have no idea the destruction you cause. I recall looking out the window of my room in Chicago. I lived on the second floor. There was kind of a husky guy, burly guy, big muscles, red hair. Had an all-American belly. He's working on his car. He had a lovely wife. And she poked her head out the door late one day while he's working on the car. She said something about dinner's going to be a little late. And right there in the street, he shouted, "What do you want me to do, starve?" I was just a young adult then. I wanted to just jump out of my skin. To openly snap at his wife like that. Why would he have contempt for his wife? How did that happen? Women openly defying their husbands. What do they hope to gain with a stunt like that? Lack of restraint is an indicator of contempt. This is a good time to tap the brake because in all these cases where I'm observing things, yes, I'm offended by these outcomes, but I don't have all the facts. That may be in those cases where I have seen women openly defying their husbands, husbands shouting and talking down to their wives openly. It may be that there's a series of events leading to that. And we're going to talk toward the end about strategies for reducing these open displays of hostility. But lack of restraint in relationship is an indicator of contempt. Contempt for the forgiven. This image up there is a classical painting of Cain and Abel. On the left of the photo, or by the photo, left of the image, Cain's got an animal to sacrifice. I'm sorry, Abel has an animal to sacrifice. Cain has produce. In that image on the right, Cain is murdering Abel. In Genesis 4, 3 to 4, it says, in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought the fruit of the ground, an offering unto Yahweh, and Abel, he also brought the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And Yahweh had respect unto Abel and to his offering. Now, classically, and I agree with this, Bible observant Bible students will say, oh, Abel brought a bloody sacrifice. That was an open admission of guilt. I have sinned. Here's my sacrifice, for a bloody sacrifice. But Cain, he brought what we would call a thanksgiving offering. Abel was declared by Yahshua to be righteous. To get righteous with Yahweh, you got to go before him and say, have mercy on me, the sinner. And that's what observant Bible students read into this. Abel is righteous. Cain killed him. I suppose that doesn't speak well for some of us in the years ahead. Maybe we'll be in the line of fire simply for being righteous. Yeah, simply for being forgiven. Contempt for Yahshua. In John 15, 23 to 25, he said, he that hateth me hateth my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which none other men did, they had not sinned. But now have they both seen and hated both me and my Father. But this cometh to pass, that the word might be fulfilled, that is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. It comes from the Psalms. They hated me without a cause. This is serious business. This ties into whoever is angry at his brother without a cause. Let's talk about this a little bit. I have learned from my sources that if you contact a Jewish rabbi and ask him, why was Jerusalem destroyed? He'll tell you one or two things. He'll say either hate without a cause or lashon haron, to evil the tongue, backbiting. Now, it's funny how this works. Yahshua predicted the downfall of the city. Historical records show that there was tremendous infighting among the Jews. One of those factions, I'm telling you, this particular faction was knuckleheads. They burned the food supply. As the Romans surrounded Jerusalem, a particular bunch of them burned the food supply. And they're thinking, okay, now we're going to fight, you know, seriously. And so a significant part of the downfall was the starvation of the people inside. But this infighting, hate without a cause. Remember, our Jewish friends, the beloved Jews, are trying to explain something like this, the fall of Jerusalem, without acknowledging the Messiah. But there was also a common belief back then that Jerusalem fell because James the Apostle was murdered. He was thrown off the pinnacle of the temple. And I think he survived the fall, and then they clubbed him to death. But there was a common belief then that James the Just was killed, persecuted, for no reason at all, right? And then that's why the city fell. But they had no reason to hate Yahshua. There was none. It all had to do with fear of losing their positions, insecurity. These guys were so depraved, reprobate. They had decided they wanted to kill Lazarus because he had been raised from the dead. And he's walking around telling people, hey, I was dead, but I'm alive. Can you imagine how sicko that is? To be parading around in the temple as though you have some kind of spiritual authority, and yet you want to kill Lazarus and Yahshua. Okay, we're going to look at contempt for Yahweh. I'm going to be citing the same passage from three translations. So we're back to this defiant guy again. Contempt for Yahweh. Numbers 15, 30 to 31. But the soul that doeth anything, ought, the old English ought, the soul that doeth ought presumptuously, whether he be born in the land or a stranger, the same reproaches Yahweh. Reproaches, that's Hebrews, Strong's Hebrews 14:42, Gadaf. Let's remember that, Gaddaf. And that soul shall be cut off from among his people, because he hath despised the word of Yahweh and hath broken his commandment. That soul shall utterly be cut off. His iniquity shall be upon him. Now, this is from the King James Version, the Word of Yahweh Bible, and the RSB, because all of them are based on the King James. But I underscore, I highlight the word presumptuously and the word reproaches. There's a similar wording in the American Standard Version. Now, I've revised it with the holy names and things, but the soul that doth ought anything with a high hand, note that, with a high hand. The previous translation said presumptuously, with a high hand. Now, the implication there is that you're like this, facing heaven with a high hand. Whether he be homeborn or a sojourner, the same blasphemeth Yahweh. That's that Hebrew word, gadaf. That soul shall be cut off from among his people, because he hath despised the word of Yahweh, so on and so forth. Then here is for the Scriptures translation. That's that little dark blue Bible that used to get passed around for free. But the being who does whatever defiantly. So previously it had presumptuously with a high hand, and then you have the word defiantly. Whether he is a native or a stranger, he reviles Yahweh. And that being shall be cut off from among his people. So you have defiantly and reviling Yahweh. So reviles there. That's also linked in with the other translation that says blasphemeth Yahweh. There's a connection here. This extremely valuable passage in Numbers creates a strong connection between defiance and reviling Yahweh. Let's look at Numbers 15:30 in context. In Numbers 15:30-31, Yahweh establishes the death penalty for defiant sin. But note this. Immediately after that, it gives you the story of the guy who gathered up sticks on Sabbath. He knew it was wrong, but he says, I'm going to go do it anyway. And the guy's executed. They held him for a while. They say, what do we do with this guy? Moses went in the tent and found out. We got to kill him. He sinned defiantly. In Numbers 15:37, Yahweh instructs Israel to wear tassels to remind them of the commandments. It is significant that the commandment about the tassels, the fringe, comes right after these two passages. Now, I know there's differing opinions about. That's okay with me that there's differing opinions about whether we should wear tassels or how often we should wear tassels. But you can't get away from the message here. Yahweh is saying, I want you guys to obey me. I bet they were shocked to find, well, he just gathered up some sticks. Nope, death penalty. There are times I'll speak up about the Sabbath because the temptation to slip is so great. But if you know something's a sin and you defiantly go do it anyway, in a sense of hostility toward Yahweh, that appears to be unforgivable. The same reproaches, kadaf, reviles Yahweh, blaspheme, all that. It's the same Hebrew used in reference to blasphemy of the Spirit in the Shem Tov Hebrew Matthew. Therefore, I tell you, every sin and blasphemy will be forgiven, but the blasphemy against the Spirit will not be forgiven. Now, I take Spirit there to be Yahweh's representation of himself, his presence of himself. And it's a way of pointing to Yahweh without mentioning him explicitly. Everybody knows in this passage, he only mentions two kinds of blasphemy, blasphemy of the Son and blasphemy of the Spirit. He doesn't mention blasphemy of the Father. So it's evident, because he's only talking about two kinds of blasphemy, it's evident that the Spirit is Yahweh's presence. Now, the people who triggered this statement by him, they said that Yahshua was casting out demons by Beelzebub. Yet, at night, Nicodemus came to him and said, Master, we know who you are. But to say, oh, the devil did that, that was an open defiance, hostile contempt for Yahweh. The central concepts are contempt, reviling, and defiance. This easily ties in blasphemy of the Spirit in Matthew chapter 12 and sinning willfully in the book of Hebrews. It's the utter defiance, contempt. I don't care what he says. I'm going to do what I want to do. I don't like this. I would like to always leave the door open. But it is possible for someone to cross the line where Yahweh says, nope, there's no turning back. So far in the presentation, I've given you cases of contempt involving human beings, cases of contempt involving Yahshua, and now the big one, contempt for Yahweh. I have seen this twice in my life, and it's ugly. There is a lovely man from Northwest Indiana. He and his wife did evangelism together. Him and his wife were an evangelical team. They had participated in miracles and healing. But one day his wife just ran off with another guy. And she wanted nothing to do with it. To behold that kind of thing, like Yahshua said earlier, he says, they saw the miracles I did and they hate me for it. I don't know why this woman did that. He prayed his head off, but she never came back. I should also say her life was turned upside down after that. The other case was a lady who had, she had terrible back pain, and she had repented of lesbianism. And in the course, this is with the saints back east, and in the course of discipling her, she started to get defiant and smart alecky. And she started to find fault with Yahweh. And in one of the key conversations, they reminded her, they said, you were healed of terrible back pain when you repented. And she says, well, I'm feeling kind of aggravated right now. In fact, my back pain's coming back, she said. So I'm even more aggravated. She would have been better off saying, I got a problem. I need help. Something's wrong. She doesn't need to say, look, I'm going to be perfect now and forever. I wonder if any of you here have ever experimented with making a vow that you would never sin. I wonder if any of you have ever done that. A number of saints have tried that. I have. It doesn't work. But what Yahweh wants is for people to come to him and say, I've sinned. I need help. Lead me out of this. Look, if Yahshua tells me to forgive you guys 70 times 7, he's not going to ask me to do something he can't do. He's very anxious to coach you and disciple you into righteousness, even for something as horrible as, well, the unspeakable. But then this is where I crash and burn. What precedes contempt? Because I'm just as concerned about what causes contempt as it is for me having this evil response to people around me. What causes it? This is an image of a man showing contempt. I wonder if that's what Laban looked like, with his teeth showing like that. That was like Joseph's big bad brothers, right? Contempt is nearly always preceded by, you ready for it? Brace yourself, you came a long way. Contempt is nearly always preceded by resentment. And that, on one hand, I want to impart to you the horror I see with this realization, but then maybe I don't want you to see it because there's a certain heaviness that comes with discovering this. Contempt is always preceded by resentment. And that's my brick wall. I came here to talk about contempt. Yeah, you know, sometimes Romero called it contemptment, didn't he? He meant contempt, right? But resentment, it's everywhere. Causes for resentment are everywhere. I have stepped on a landmine. I was not ready for this. Think about the times you've harbored resentment. I deal with it all the time. Now, most of the time, I nix it off. You know, I'm a child of the king, you know, overlook faults and things like that. But you guys know very well that your day-to-day life is bombarded with resentments. Plural. So here are some common sources of resentments with that nuclear bomb going off. I mean, this is just a sampling. You know, I ran out of room. I was going to make more in the list, but I'd have to make the font smaller. Missed expectations, trespasses, unfair treatment, neglect, inconsiderate behavior, jealousies, disappointments, broken promises, overwork. Ooh, how about that one? Overwork. Lack of appreciation. These things cause resentments in our hearts when we experience them. How about lack of respect? I'm going to put one more thing on the slide. I want you to get ready because you might want to kick me out after this. Okay? I haven't packed my things, but I'll leave on request. Okay? Here's another source of resentments. You ready? Tabernacles. I want us to confront this thing. We come up here and we say, because we believe it to be true, we say, Tabernacles, we're going to experience inconveniences. I really believe we are mature enough to deal with the inconvenience of, oh, the car doesn't start anymore. I got a flat tire over there. Time and chance. But at Tabernacles, the inconvenience we must confront is the way we get in each other's way. The way we do little things that cause resentment. I left that pan over there. Where did it go? Hey, I got a bunch of eggs over here I'm going to make. Where'd they go? Who moved that? Who changed that? Who didn't show up? You were supposed to be there. What happened? Another one is leaving a mess for someone else to clean up. That's painful. Tabernacles has a way of bringing this out. Rather than despair, I got a different idea. First, I'm going to tell you why it gets worse when the group gets bigger. There's a thing called Price's Law. There's a picture of, I think, Professor Price. For any large group of population N, this is going to be too hard to follow, half the work is done by the square root of N. With examples, you know what this means. If you have a feast site with 256 ordinary people, now right now we have a feast attendance is running about 200, but that counts children. But we may someday have 256 people. According to Price's Law, if we have 256 people running around this place, the square root of 256 is 16. So 16 of the people on the grounds are doing half the work. Do any of you who really get into it ever get the feeling you're doing half the work? You ever have that feeling? Or maybe nobody appreciates it, nobody acknowledges it? As for me, I'm devastated by the quality of the feast experience we have here. Ever since I've been linked up with the Mansager clan and the others, it's always been effort, quality, sacrifice. Oh, that salad bar. Oh, that. For those of you who are thinking of coming next year, the salad bar is worth the price alone, I tell you. But the way I see the others running around, working so hard. But you see, this is based on 256 ordinary people. We are all priests. According to the scriptures, we're all priests. Okay, here's an example of a living fossil, a true doctrine from the ancient apostles that still lives in the Catholic realm. Now, I don't look to the Catholic Church for doctrine, but it just so happens the Catholic Church teaches that all their members are priests. You may not know that, but some are ordained for specific tasks. But they got that particular thing right. Everyone in this, well, every baptized member is a priest. Yes, including the women. If instead of 256 ordinary people, how about 256 holy people? this analysis would not hold. But among those 16, with an ordinary analysis, the square root of 16 is 4. Out of those 16, 4 of them are doing half the work among the 16, and so on. So for a group of 256, 4 of them are doing 25% of the work. Another 12 are doing another 25% of the work. And the remaining half of the work is being smeared across 240 people. Now, this is ordinary people, not holy people. People dedicated to Yahshua. People dedicated to Yahshua as their great teacher and dedicated to Yahweh. So, knowing that this is the human trend, it is no wonder that your nerves are sticking out like wires and curled up at the ends. I remember we had a lead musician here years ago, and everybody was coming to him, "Help me with the song, help me with the song." And I came up to that guy, and I looked at his face. I said, "I'm not going to ask him to help me with my song. This poor guy is worn out." And I couldn't do it to him because I saw him as one of the maybe four, you know. The feast has a way of stressing us and pressing us. Now, this is just one environment in which resentments will come up. What was supposed to be a grim sermon on the dangers of contempt has become the discovery of a much greater problem, resentment. This ugly monster has the potential to ruin our candidacy as holy people. Let us get real and let us confront this. I want this room full of saints to be experts on stopping resentment. Now, much has been said up to this point. We're almost done. Much has been said up to this point during the feast. Good things about gratitude, being content, being patient, lowering expectations, focusing on giving. Yet the victim of our resentment, the victim of our resentment triggering ways must have some input on the assessment of what's going on. Because those of you who have ever been in an abusive relationship or watched it, you often find how the victim is put upon to continue to be kind, to be merciful and patient. And though I can't get into it now, we have scriptural evidence that it's okay to pull away from an abusive relationship. And I don't mean divorce, but there is scriptural basis for pulling away from an abusive relationship. And I know all these factors have to be in balance, divine balance, but the victim should have some say. So while others speak about the importance of these tough-minded disciplines, gratitude, contentment, being patient, lowering expectations, focus on giving, etc., I dare the weasel in every one of you to seize the courage to be confrontable. We're all weasels. We all like to dodge controversy. We don't like confrontation. But I'm challenging the weasel in you to be confrontable. There was an incident in the book of Acts where the Gentile widows were not getting as much food as the Jewish widows. That would create a lot of resentment. Can you imagine having select members of the assembly getting piles high of food at fellowship meal and others getting a little bit? You know how resentment would build up real quick with that? The apostles received that complaint and they fixed it, and they created the office of deacon for that. And I further dare the weasel in every one of you to seize the courage to speak up with love in due season. It's very reasonable to say, "Hey, what you said there hurt my feelings. Hey, I know you didn't mean to hurt me, or you didn't mean to do any damage, but when you left those dishes there on the table, it hindered someone else from having a meal." Or maybe me. Never mind complaining for somebody else, but "Hey, me and my family wanted to use that table and you didn't clean it up." Are we going to be a victorious people, a holy people, Are we really going to use the lessons of tabernacles to their full extent? Not merely smiling through the raindrops, but knitting our hearts together in love, even among people who are very different. Ephesians 4:31-32 says, "And grieve not the Holy Spirit of Elohim, whereby you are sealed unto the day of redemption." I give a sermon on resentment, and then I got a cell phone distracting everybody. It's not Sabbath. If that's for me, I'll call back, okay? Grieve not the Holy Spirit of Elohim, whereby you are sealed unto the day of redemption. Yeah, you are sealed by the Spirit of the Holy One unto the day of redemption. You are all holy. Those of you who have been baptized, you're all holy people. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. I don't want to hear about who bugged you. I don't want to hear about who offended you. We already have a process for fixing that. If it's a small thing, nix it off. If you think it's worthy of correction, go pursue that divinely ordained path. Be you kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as Elohim for the Messiah's sake hath forgiven you. Now, when I talk about feedback, corrective feedback, sometimes they call it in engineering, they call it negative feedback, because negative simply means you're trying to undo what was already there. I prefer to use the word corrective feedback. It's politically correct, I know, and it gives you a sense of what the objective is. I do not believe in constructive criticism, because criticism is negative. I believe in constructive feedback. I beg you, friends, I've been on this journey just like you. Consider the sin that you're dealing with as nothing more than a tumor or a pimple or an abscess or a blackhead, huh? A blackhead, something you just got to dislodge. Once you renounce your sin, you'll be anxious to say, okay, let me fix that. I got to fix that. I'm scared to death of standing before the judge. And he says, I sent you friends and brethren to bring to your attention things you had to fix. I don't want to hear that on the day of reckoning. Contempt is deadly and dangerous, in summary. Relationships poisoned by contempt are difficult to restore. Contempt is preceded by many smaller resentments. You know, they kind of pile up. Matthew 18 is a stroke of divine genius. Use it to build relationships, crush resentments, and prevent corrosive contempt. Matthew 18 is not a method for getting people out. It's a method for keeping people in. And as a people, let us commit to prevail over this thing. Please, friends, I beg you, let us this day, let us look back at this tabernacle at the time we said, we are going to be a holy people. We're going to act like it. We're going to open our hearts up to feedback, constructive feedback, and we're going to speak up when something crosses a line and it's worthy of pushback. And of course, I leave myself open. Anybody wants to come to me and straighten me out, I welcome that, okay? I'm afraid I need all the help I can get, okay? Discovering your contempt. I thank you all for your kind attention, and Yahweh bless you.